The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
I look forward to this time every single week as my good friend Mark Ingham, the UAB Athletic Director. It's called the UAB Director's Chair. It's everything about UAB athletics and then some. We like to pull back the curtain on all of college sports. A lot of interesting things to get into this week here as we broadcast on this day of the draft. And since, of course, it is the NFL draft tonight, we're broadcasting here on this Thursday. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. The show run at least five times in the TKR app. We're going to have you draft your best rock band. I want you to draft your best singer, your best bass player, your best drummer, and your best lead guitarist. And I'm assuming you'll have some honorable mentions in there. So I want you to draft your favorite band from top to bottom. First of all, how are you doing, brother? Everything good?
Yeah, man, I'm excellent. Thank you.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Interesting news yesterday, and I was watching the news last night, and I see Reggie Bush up on the TV, and I'm like, what's Reggie doing up there? And for the first time since 2005, he will be holding that Heisman Trophy again. It's going to be awarded back to him, of course. We remember what happened with USC back in the early 2000s when they had all kinds of Pete Carroll was on the sidelines, and of course they were going undefeated, and they were paying players, and Reggie had Kim Kardashian on his back while he did push-ups and the whole nine yards, and it was just, there were celebrities on the sidelines. It was unbelievable. They had to vacate that national championship. And obviously Reggie had to give up his Heisman Trophy where he ran over 1700 yards. I believe he had 18 touchdowns that year. It was unbelievable. One of the greatest college football performances for anybody in our entire life. And now he gets his trophy back. Times have changed. Your thoughts?
I think it's terrible. I know that's going to be controversial for some people to hear, but I think it's terrible. I mean, look, there were clearly rules broken. To come back now and say, well, the rules have changed that would have made that permissible, but it wasn't permissible. It's like saying, well, you murdered somebody 10 years ago, but now you're allowed to murder people, so that doesn't count, so we're going to let you out of prison. I mean, it's the same thing. You broke a law. That was the law. That was the rule at the time. I don't agree with all that stuff about now because the rule has changed. Now that makes us innocent. That he's not innocent. He did the wrong thing. It's obvious that he did the wrong thing. That's why Pete Carroll went to the NFL. He got to get away from it. Mm-hmm. People all around the program at the time, once they left, they started spilling all the dirt about the stuff they used to do. Reggie Bush was an incredible player. I wouldn't dare say that he didn't deserve to win the trophy. He absolutely should have won the trophy. He was the best player in college football. He should have won the trophy. But if they made a decision that part of it was to take that trophy away, what are they doing? So I just, you know, it's kind of like the same stuff around NIL right now. People who broke rules before NIL and collectives were permissible, they still broke the rules. Mm-hmm. They knowingly broke the rules. They're not all of a sudden, they shouldn't be free and clear from the rule that they broke. They broke it.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Listen, I don't think the Heisman Trophy should have ever been taken away from him in the first place.
Yeah, maybe that's the truth. That's a good point, Tony. Yeah. Maybe he should have never lost the trophy to begin with. So it's really not about the trophy for me as much as a question are we exonerating him from any wrongdoing, which he clearly did.
Yeah, I mean, he's one man on a team of 120 guys. And obviously they broke rules and they had their national championship taken away. They're still the national champions to me. I hate that vacation thing where you look at their record now and they're 0-13. I'm like, whatever. We know what they did that year. And we know that they were the best football team. I probably wouldn't have taken his trophy away at all. Here's the thing. Now that we've exonerated him in some sorts, certainly in public opinion, now he's kind of a hero again. And I'm kind of like, well, wait a minute. This guy did something wrong. For 19 years, he didn't have that trophy. And now all of a sudden we're saying, okay, times have changed. And now he's kind of a hero. And I don't think there's going to be any doubt. He'll be on the Pat McAfee show today. He'll be all over ESPN. He's going to be on late night television.
See what he thinks. Like, is he happy to receive that back? Or is he kind of like,
oh, I think he loves it. I think he's been pining to get it back for like the last 3 or 4 years. That's the NIL went into place back in June of 2021. The minute the NIL came up, he's been trying to get that trophy back. And so I get it. And he's always going to be a Heisman Trophy winner to me. And I guess, you know, you want to take that asterisk off now. I'm happy for him. That's great. But again, like you said, when he did something, he did it and it was wrong at the time. And we have changed our rules and thank goodness it wasn't. And here's the other thing. This is not a legality thing. This is a rules thing.
Well, okay? it's the Heisman Trophy foundation or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not even the NCAA.
You asked a fraternity of guys in that room and zero would probably say, take that trophy away from him, even after Texas or USC won the national championship.
Yeah.
Because they're like, no, he's a brother. We know what he did on the football field. That doesn't take anything away from what he did.
Didn't they take O.J. Simpson's away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he get it back? Did he not get it back?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't recall.
We'll look that up because, I mean, he wasn't found guilty. I mean, civilly he was, but criminally he wasn't. So, yeah, really interesting stuff. Something else that's kind of hit me this week, we're talking to Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. You can go to uabsports.com for everything they do on their website. It's fantastic. Of course, lots of sports going on right now, including baseball, softball, and more. And, of course, football right around the corner. Basketball season, fantastic season. The champions of the AAC. This whole Caitlin Clark thing has just been an absolute monster. You can't get away from it. And I think it's great. She last night, again, we're recording this show here on, what is it today? The 25th of April, which is the Thursday. She became the first two-time winner of the James E. Sullivan Award, which is an award that's been around for over 100 years, or nearly 100 years. So this is something that's really special, which is known as the best college or athlete or Olympic athlete. And she's obviously done something. She did everything but won a national championship this year. And I'm hearing about, you know, the numbers are just off the wall, that there was more money spent on the final four games in women's basketball than there were in men's, that viewership, they gave this whole thing about World Series games, NFL playoffs and NHL playoffs, and how women's basketball was viewed by three times more people than game six of this particular World Series, whatever. And I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. If I'm watching television and there's a men's basketball team on that I have no clue who they are, and there's a Iowa playing, I will probably watch the men's basketball game just because I'm more into men's basketball. I know more about them. It's not to say that I'm not open. And that goes for soccer, it goes for anything else that I'm not really into. I'm willing to learn. I do think where power comes, the play comes, and that is ESPN has gotten behind this. And I think that's vitally important. I think the USFL is important. When you get a major sponsor behind you and some major money and major promos, you're going to do better. And I think they really got behind the women's movement. But is this a moment where we're going to look back on it as an athletic director? Do you look back on this? Are women's sports different now? Has something changed?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's changed over time is that, look, the men's game is better too, because so when I was a kid, I never did any one-on-one training. When I played football, I played football, and then I went to basketball season, and then I went to baseball season. And believe it or not, I used to also play soccer as a kid. And, you know, you just did that sport during that season. Now these kids they got one-on-one trainers to teaching them ball handling skills, making them better shooters from a really young age. And a lot of kids, you know, the downside of that is a lot of kids get really burned out. But I think the skill level of players in all sports are better than they used to be, because they have better training. They have better teachers. They have, you know, they're finding ex-pros and ex-college greats who on the side enjoy teaching their skill. You know, I was a long snapper in college. I taught myself how to do it in combination with going to a couple of camps at Virginia Tech and North Carolina, and then just sort of messing around with it, throwing balls against the tree in my backyard. That's how I figured out how to do it. And I did it wrong for a long time. Well, my son does it. I taught him from the moment he started trying to do it. I at least at a minimum was able to show him the correct way to try to do it. That didn't mean he was going to go, you know, do it and do it well. He does do it well, but it's because he started. He never tried to do it wrong, if that makes sense. He never tried experimenting with the wrong technique. He did the right technique from the beginning. So just as like a microcosm of this topic, all sport, I think, is better skilled, men's basketball, women's basketball, football, baseball, you name it, because there's hitting coaches and swing coaches. And we as parents are sending our kids to these people to try to develop them to at least do it correctly. And then their talent and their own interest in being great has to take over. There's a moment where my interest has to, your interest as a student, as the kid, your interest has to exceed mine.
Yeah.
But I can put you in a position to at least get the proper training and do things, swing the bat correctly, shoot the ball proper. And Caitlin, I watched several Iowa games. I say several, I don't know, four or five maybe during mm-hmm. the season. What makes her exciting to watch is that that young lady will shoot the ball from anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so that was what I thought was kind of fun
to make it,
yeah. about watching her was like, she crosses midcourt. If she's got the ball, don't assume she's not going to shoot it because she very well might. And a lot of times it'd go in and her coach had given her the green light to do it because of that fact, because she had such great aim. What I think is really puzzling is I've seen a lot of women's players, kind of current and former professionals, WNBA stars, kind of talking bad about Caitlin, like, oh, she's not that good, or whatever. And I'm thinking, you guys need to embrace this. Like, people are paying attention to the sport. This is good for the sport. Why are you letting your own personal jealousy that she didn't play at your alma mater? You know, she didn't play at UConn, so all the UConn players hate her, sure. you know? You know, she beat some records, but there, I don't know, there was some player that from a different division or something that maybe had more points or before the three-pointer or you know, before the three-point line. People are like, well, she only did it because she had the three-point line. It's like, hey, man, can you just celebrate that the young lady scored a bunch of points
mm-hmm.
and more people are paying attention to women's basketball in than they have in a long time? You know, I was fortunate. I worked at Tennessee for a long time. I went to school in Tennessee, and I spent a lot of time around Pat Summitt, who is absolutely the best coach I've ever been around, hands down, period. No gender, no sport, doesn't matter. The best. The best.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I saw a lot of great women's players, and it's fun to watch. Like, really good high-level basketball, men's or women's, is fun to watch. And Caitlin Clark played on a really good team, and she's fun to watch. Like, we don't have to dissect it more than that, do we? Can we just say she was fun to watch and isn't that great for the game?
I think that we are a little uncomfortable when we see a woman feel and show her confidence as much as she does. And that goes for the gal last year. I forget. That should just tell you right now. I can't remember the young lady's name last year that was just on fire and pretty much told everyone she was on fire. And again, I can't even remember her name. So that probably speaks volumes of what we're talking about here. I don't think I'm going to forget Caitlin Clark's name anytime soon. It bothers me a little bit that this is a team sport and that I didn't even know anybody other person on the basketball court with her. I can't imagine being another Iowa basketball player because they got overshadowed by her the entire season and seemed to have loved it. I mean, they realized they needed her to win a championship. Don't get me wrong.
Think they appeared to look, if there was jealousy in that locker room, there may have been.
They did a great job at shadowing it up.
No, yeah. And when you had the cameras privately, you know, kind of go into the locker room during the tournament and stuff and show them, you know, putting the Iowa name on the next round of the bracket. It wasn't like a bunch of teammates were sitting around like this.
I didn't watch enough post game shows. I don't know if Caitlin came out and said, you know, I couldn't do it without my teammates or my teammates fed me well. I'm sure she did. And so, you know, that's fine. This is not when I'm bringing this up to Boohood. I'm just wondering if we have reached a particular mountaintop, an apex, and we're about ready to, because I think we've done it with soccer. I think somehow soccer, and maybe it had to do with the Olympics. Soccer is different than it was 10 years ago. Now we're actually watching soccer now. And I don't know why I'm not, I still don't get into it as much as a lot of other people do, but it is a wonderful sport if you're into it. But do women's sports, the one thing that a lot of guys that will fray away and go, I ain't gonna watch women's basketball. I'll watch Louisiana Lafayette before I'll watch, you know, Iowa play basketball. A lot of guys and women will say that it's more of a pure game, that it's not, they call the fouls, and intuitively they don't allow double dribble. There's not the basketball moves. There's not as much, dunking. It's more, basketball as a pure sport that we created. Would you agree with that? And what is it about the women's basketball game that they can, as an athletic director, that they can take advantage of that the men's game can't really compete with?
It's physical size. So what you have in the women's game, first of all, I think they call too many fouls. What I observe watching women's basketball.
In women's basketball or both?
I think they call too many fouls in women's basketball, at least at least in the games that I get to watch of UAB.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think too many times they you know, you run by me and they assume I'm going to foul you and say blow the whistle. And in reality, if you could go back, if fouls were something that were reviewable, you would see that I never physically even touched you. I got near you, but or I did touch the ball, or maybe my part of my body did touch part of your body, but it didn't impact. So you don't need to call that foul. I think that they let the guys play a little more physically. So on the foul subject, I think they called too many. But here's the purity of the game thing. There are little to no dunks in women's basketball. There are some, but it's, you know, by and large, you're not going to go to one men's game, college or pro, and not see at least a dunk.
Sure.
Many times you'll go to a women's game and not see a dunk, right?
Yeah.
But obviously we know that some ladies can. But the purity of the game, because of their physical size, of course, ladies are getting taller, so this is going to evolve. But in the men's game, they are so tall and their arms are so long that there are not great passing lanes in men's basketball because the court, remember, is the exact same size.
Mm-hmm.
So while the ball size is smaller in women's basketball, the court is the same size. So the men physically take up just by having their feet, you know, in an athletic stance, have their feet apart and their arms out. They just physically take up more space, which means those backdoor cuts and those passing lanes that you can enjoy in the ladies game, it's really not as available. Not mm-hmm. like it's never available, but it's less available in the men's game. So you get to see some of that, what you're talking about, that the purity of how basketball started and give and go and backdoor cuts and all that kind of thing that we saw in the before people ever dunked the ball, you'd see a lot of that. Let's run the picket fence, Hoosiers type stuff. And you still get to see a lot of that in the women's game. But I attribute that completely to there is space to do so.
And would you not agree that this is probably one of the positive parts of NIL? The fact that women are getting paid, because I think for the most part, we never thought that women, we wouldn't know we get Title IX and everything's got to be fair across the lines. But I don't know if we ever thought we'd see a female making $4 million on the side. And now, of course, she's going to go to the Indiana Fever. She's going to make a lot more off the basketball court than she will make on the court. She just signed a new deal with Nike. I think she's got her own gym shoe coming out. And
yeah, she makes that's amazing. A monster deal and good, again, a good for her, good for women's basketball.
Yeah.
That Nike is acknowledging that. And I think that's good for the game and for all women's sport. I think the dollar is an evolution of inflation. There are a lot of women's players that have had other deals, right? Candace Parker has had good deals. Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi had good deals. And then go to other sports like Mia Hamm in soccer and, you know, go way, way back to Florence Griffith Joyner, Jackie Joyner Kersee, like some great track athletes. There are other elite female athletes that have had good deals. Yeah, I'm sure somebody was going to say, yeah, but hers is the biggest deal ever. Well, until it's not, yep. You know, somebody else had that distinction until Caitlin. Now Caitlin has that, but somebody else is going to have that in a few years. But I think it's somewhat due to inflation, but also the acknowledgement like, hey, there's real value here. And let's embrace that again, all positive for all groups.
I do think it's really remarkable that we're telling this young lady, if you could stay in college one more year, it would be financially beneficial to do so. She's done everything she could possibly do because yeah. She'll make a lot more money in college than she would by going pro, which is just, I don't know if that.
Basketball.
Yeah.
She's making more money in basketball.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what she does.
If I was to pay her $100 and the WNBA Fever pays her 80, she makes more.
Well, but, you know, I think they came to light, too, when Brittany Griner was arrested over in the Soviet Union in Russia. And we were like, why the hell is she over there? It's because she makes a lot more money over there than she makes over here. I don't know how we fix the WNBA or if it's even fixable, because the money's got to be there in order to pay these players.
And, you know, there was a story that that Ice Cube offered Caitlin like $5 million maybe to play in that 3-on-3 league that he's got. Great. If she could somehow do both, good for her. Like, I think the market is there. Now, anytime I talk about pro sports, I need to have like an asterisk on the screen here that I likely don't know what I'm talking about. Okay. But one of the things that I feel like I've observed in with the difference between the NBA and the WNBA is related to the draft. And I know that's also, it coincides with their season. So maybe this, maybe there is no solution to what I'm about to say. But like, as the men's basketball season ended, Eric Gaines, for us, he's off training and he is going to meet with pro scouts and they are evaluating him. And he's up at that thing in that pro NBA sort of tryout thing in Portsmouth. And like he's, this is what the NBA does. Mm-hmm. And there's this huge event with the NBA. And if you're going to get drafted or you think you're going to get drafted, you know it. You know, teams have said, the Pistons have called you and said, hey, Tony, we're just going to see how things go. We really like you. And the Timberwolves called you. Hey, we're going to, Tony, we're going to, you know, we may get you at the end of the first or, you know, watch. We're really excited about you. Maybe you join it. Doesn't mean they're going to do it, but yep. You know that you might. Mm-hmm. The WNBA, they went like, it was like the next week after the Final Four, the next week was the draft. So there's none of that interview time, because that's part of it. That's part of the process, is that there's an interview. It's a bit of a personality assessment. Mm-hmm. They do all sorts of the Wunderlich test and they do all these things to assess what is your personality like and does it fit well with the rest of the team that we've assembled and of what we're looking for. And the WNBA doesn't seem to be doing any of that stuff. And in fact, and to your point, now I can't name the young lady, though I can see her in my mind. There's a young lady who was at the WNBA draft, one of Caitlin Clark's teammates. She was sitting in the stands in support of Caitlin at the draft, and she gets drafted herself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And didn't even know that she might get drafted. They pull her out of the stands to bring her up to the stage. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, how does this happen? Like, she doesn't even know that she might get drafted.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to, that sounds like this indictment on WNBA and whoever. I'm not trying to say that. I just think that somehow if there's a way for that process to be a little bit more like the NBA, I think that's positive. I don't know. It seems like there's something missing there.
You got to strike while the iron's hot. And it does seem like the WNBA and their draft is a little too quick after the end it's of right March after. Madness. I mean, it's right. Yeah. After. And maybe that's by design. I don't know. But yeah. I would bet that now that we've got more notoriety surrounding the league and more people watching it and more responsiveness, and maybe they'll push that off just a little bit. Mark Ingram.
They know why they do it. That's my point. I started with, I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. They know why they do it. I don't know why they do it. And I'm sure that there's a great reason why.
All right, I got some more college hoops I want to get into. Okay. Or do you want to get into some rock and roll? You want to hold off the college hoops till next week?
Whatever you want, man.
I want to get into this college hoops thing because I think it's really interesting. You know, we keep hearing about parity, and certainly having you on every single week, you're from the group of five, and there's autonomy, the Power Five, and then we're trying to make sure everyone's got a seat to the table, and there's 12 teams, there's 14 teams, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always want to see, we love dynasties, we love teams that make it year after year after year. We just saw UConn win back-to-back for the first time since Florida did in the 2000s, and that's great. Certainly, we see it in pros a lot. But in the last seven March Madnesses, the last seven Final Fours, and of course, we didn't have a Final Four that COVID year. How many of those 28 teams that have played in the seven Final Fours are repeaters? How many of those teams out of the 28 actually been to more than one Final Four?
In the last seven?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know, obviously, UConn, and does Villanova fit into that?
It does.
Are they the only ones?
Kansas and Gonzaga are the other two. Out of the 28 teams, 24 different teams that constituted the total of 28 Final Four teams. I think that's amazing. I don't know if you can go to any other sport and see that type of turnover. And I'm talking about South Carolina. I'm talking about Oregon, Loyola of Chicago, Michigan, San Diego State, Miami, FAU, just to name a few. Villanova, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas. The big dogs are there. UCLA's there. They're there. Gonzaga's there. Baylor's there. Michigan State there. Auburn made it. Alabama made it. The big dogs make it.
Funny enough,
Kentucky's not on that list, by the way.
It continues to tell you why letting more people participate is important. Mm-hmm. You're calling Gonzaga a big dog because they've done so well in basketball. We were just in Spokane where Gonzaga is, okay? They're in a conference. Do you know what conference they're in?
The WAC. No.
No.
The,
you don't even know. That's what I'm saying.
The Mountain West.
You don't even know what conference
they're in. The Mountain West.
No, they're not. I don't even know. I don't know what they're in. They're not, but it's not the Mountain West. Might be the WAC. But the, here's the point. The point is you don't even know who else is in their conference. You don't even know.
Yeah.
You can guess. So that's the point. Look, Gonzaga has found a way to be great regardless of what conference affiliation they are. The Big East is considered to be this great basketball conference.
They're in the West Coast Conference, by the way. They're
West Coast. Yes. It's not the WAC or the Mountain West. Yeah. West Coast. So the Big East is considered to be this really good basketball conference, and it is. But look, UConn getting there from the Big East is not like Alabama getting there from the SEC or Duke getting there from the ACC or whatever. That's not the same. Like, these guys have a limited number of entries into the tournament, and it proves that you don't, and the Big East doesn't have a bunch of money.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, you got the SEC, the ACC, and the Big Ten, and these, they got all this money, and that's why they should be there. Well, they should be there. But the proof is you got to recruit, and you got to train, and you got to coach these kids to be great. And UConn figured out a way to do it without the big budget. Well, they have a big budget, but without the influx of money from their conference, because they don't get much. Mm-hmm. Their institution is supporting them and they're selling tickets and whatever. They're doing it themselves. Villanova, guys, is basically Samford.
Mm, yeah.
And they were in the tournament. Look, good for Samford for getting in the tournament. But what I'm telling you is I used to live a few miles from Villanova. I've seen it. I've been there. I've been to their arena, which the Pete Hanna Center and Bartow Arena are 50 times better than Villanova's on-campus arena. Now, Villanova plays some of their games where the Sixers play, which used to be called Wells Fargo. I don't know if it still has the same name, but where the 76ers play downtown, they play some of their games there, and they're great. But their on-campus venue is, I'm talking about folding tables with drinks on it, like high school. Yeah. Like, I'm talking about like that, okay? So it's a small private school out in the suburbs. And so when you say, oh, yeah, but Villanova, Villanova, man, Villanova, Samford, making the finals and winning the championship. I mean, that's why we got to let more people in. That's what makes the tournament great.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to compete.
And you got teams like my Musketeers, who are not even on this list, perennially are always dancing. They're always there. They didn't make it this year. But I just thought that was really interesting because it seems like the last couple of years we've had San Diego State, FAU, we had some really interesting teams make it in. I'm thinking to myself, you know, we always talk about that parity. Now, we haven't had one of those teams win the national title, which I'm okay with.
Villanova.
Villanova
and UConn.
Yeah. But, I mean, UConn this year was the best basketball team out there. And so,
no doubt.
Yeah. So,
and UConn, how about this? UConn's won the championship more than anybody in the last 25 years.
Isn't that crazy? Six times. Yeah, three times more than anyone else.
Everybody wants to talk about the Blue Bloods, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody ever mentions UConn as a Blue Blood.
Yep.
But they've won more championships than anybody else.
There you go. All right. Let's do some classic rock. You want to do this?
Sure.
I love it. We try to talk some classic rock. And certainly during the football season, we'll always talk classic rock because we're on the TKR. We're on Tony Curry Radio here. And of course, you can hear this show at least five times a week, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And by the way, our viewership here, if you missed last week, we had Andy Kennedy, who just dropped by the office. And we're working on doing some more things with him and Trent Dilfer coming up a little bit later on this summer. So super excited about that. All right. So say draft is going on later on tonight in the NFL. I wanted you to draft your band, your favorite band. You said, am I picking the best or am I picking people that I like? I don't really care. I want you to take the best singer for you. It can be the best singer. Or it could be a singer you just like, but you're drafting a band. You are allowed to go on the playground right now and you can pick anybody you want. And you can pick dead ones if you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I want you to pick out a best singer, a best lead guitarist, a best bass player, and a best drummer. We'll go one by one. We'll go back and forth. Okay. You want to start with best drummer?
Sure.
Okay, start with the best drummer. Who's your best drummer you're drafting tonight?
John Bonham.
Ooh, that's good. And of course, John has been on the he's on the road right now.
His son.
Yeah, John. I'm sorry. Yeah,
Jason Bonham, his son.
I'm sorry. I got so excited because I'm seeing that name Bonham all the place. Yes, his dad obviously was unbelievable Led Zeppelin, but Jason has been on the road a lot, and he had a song out in the '90s. I forget what it was called. It was a fantastic song. It was a big A.
He might be traveling. Is Jason Bonham? he might be traveling. You know, Sammy Hagar has put a band together.
He's doing it with The Circle. I think he's doing it with Loverboy. And I think Loverboy is opening up. And I think Jason's doing that show. And yes, and I think it's Sammy Hagar with the Joe Satriani or is it Stevie Vai? I can't remember. Satriani.
You're right.
And that's a show that we really probably should go see somewhere. Since you don't do honorable mentions on this, I'm going to throw a couple out. I think anytime.
You know, I love Alex Van Halen. I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why I went with John.
I think it's amazing when you have a drummer who can sing. I don't know how you do it. And I've got a friend of mine who can play guitar and the harp at the same time. And it's like when you can play one instrument and sing, it's amazing. When you can play two, and sing at the same time. Unflipping believable. I don't see it. I was going to go with Don Henley, and I would say as an honorable mention, not only that, be good. He's a great singer. I think Phil Collins is one of the greatest musicians. He could play everything. If you ever seen the video Missed Again, but I'm going to go in with just because every time I saw it, it was the MTV years. Matt Furnett, the Loverboy drummer. I remember seeing Working for the Weekend on MTV because they came up rotation like every 3 minutes and him hitting that cowbell to start that Working for the Weekend thing. And he was the first guy that I remember seeing on the drum set that just beat the hell out of the Skins. I mean, he was not a jazz player. He didn't have the sticks between the pointer finger and the middle finger. He had them like drumsticks and he was beating the drums as hard as he possibly could and just going around. I mean, I just love drummers that do that. I don't know how they do it, how they keep their stamina up. Tommy Lee, another one's guys. He may not be the best drummer, but he beats the living
life. It's exhausting. I played drums as a kid. It's exhausting. And so another honorable mention that I've got is Neil Peart from Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
I'm really a Pink Floyd
from
fan.
From Rush, you mean? Yeah.
Or Rush, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want either one of those. I don't like Rush or Pink Floyd. But Neil Peart from Rush.
There you go. All right. Give me, let's go bass player.
Yeah. So I think the all-time greatest bass player is a guy named Billy Sheehan. Billy played for when David Lee Roth left Van Halen and he put the band together with Steve Vai. His bass player was Billy Sheehan. Now, Billy went on to play with a band called Mr. Big.
Yep.
That was also I was a big fan of. They had, I think, two albums. But I think Billy, you know, he plays a very complex style. He plays fast, really clean. That's my guy.
He is. He did not get much credit at all. When you said that, I knew who he was, but I'd forgotten that he was in David Lee Roth's band only because Stevie Vai was pretty much 1A, 1B when it came to that. It's hard not to mention Paul McCartney just because it's Paul McCartney. It's funny because you ask anybody out there what guitar did Paul McCartney play, and most of the people out there couldn't even tell you he played bass. But he played a hell of a bass. I think one guy, and I love guys that get into their music. And the bass player is always that one guy who's dressed impeccably that sits there with his hand hanging over the guitar and just plucking the strings and plays it.
Yeah.
Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
No,
it's fun.
He just beat the bejeebers out of his guitar. Love watching Flea
jump around.
Oh man, just jumping around. But I have to go, with a guy that I got an opportunity to interview in 1991. It was about 4 months, 5 months, maybe 6 months before he had passed away. But I'm going to go with Thunderfingers. I'm going to go with John Entwistle, just because I've been a Who fan for my entire life. I was actually in Cincinnati when they had the tragedy at Riverfront when 11 people died. My brother was actually at that show. Mm-hmm. And 11 people got trampled, and that changed the way we see concerts. There is no longer festival seating for the most part at any venue. But John Entwistle was just an amazing drummer. And if you go back and listen to some of the stuff on like Quadrophenia, I mean, you could just listen to the drum part and just listen to the bass part and just listen to the guitar part and then listen to the singer part. And if you could only have one of those four parts in all the Who music, I'd take the bass every time. That's how God John Entwistle was. Yeah. All right. You want to go lead guitar or lead singer?
Let's go guitar.
Lead guitarist. Who you got?
Well, you know, on my honorable mention, I think we talked about this when we were talking about our greats. Eddie is my guy there. But I put Steve Vai in the honorable mention list, and there's so many others that we could talk about, but we're just trying to talk about just who are we drafting. I'm going to go with Eddie.
I'm going to go, and I say this because I am blowing some smoke because he's a friend of mine and I know he listens to this show, but I'm going to go with Damon Johnson just because I know him and I know how hard he works at being a great guitar player. He's now the lead guitarist for Lynyrd Skynyrd. You don't get that gig just because you're a guitar player. You get that gig because you're a hell of a great guitar player. He's a great singer and a great writer too. But I'd have to go with Angus Young just because he's one of my favorites. Yeah. They're going on the road, May 17th. They're playing through August 17th. Their first leg, the European part of the AC/DC 50th anniversary tour. And he's 74, something like that. And normally when you see a 74-year-old lying on the floor, it's because they're in their life alert. Help me. I can't get up. He's actually on the floor playing his guitar, making circles around the rest of us. He runs an average like 4 miles a night during the shows. It's just flipping amazing. And by the way, William Shatner, he does a show on the History Channel. It's called The Unexplained. Did you know William Shatner is 90 flipping years old? He is 90 years old. Go pull up a video of William Shatner after the show and just, I don't know what in the hell he's taking. He's either got the greatest doctor of all time because you can't tell the Botox line, you can't tell anything, but I'm pretty sure if he's not 80, if he's not 90, he's 89 and pushing 90, but he's not, and he's still working more now than he's ever. But he's just unbelievable. When you talk about these rock and rollers, and I'm thinking to myself, he's 16 years older than Angus Young. And I'm like, amazed he's still playing guitar. I'm like, it's crazy. Yeah. It really is.
That's incredible.
All right.
You'll like this. So, My kids go to Vestavia High School and they do this big fundraiser for the O'Neill Comprehensive Cancer Center here at UAB. They raise about $250,000 every year for the cancer center, which is really incredible. And then they raise another $130,000 for another charity. So they're probably raising $400,000 a year for local charities, which is awesome. But I'm at this event they had a week or two ago. And it's kind of a festival thing at the high school. So I go there and there's a band playing and they're playing Freebird. Nice. And their high school kid, it's a high school band now, and it's not, they didn't hire somebody.
Yeah.
It's a high school band providing entertainment. And this kid named Jay Pickett is playing guitar. And I'm telling you, he plays that guitar solo in Freebird like you could close your eyes and you thought it, you were 1975, man.
That's great.
I mean, he is ripping it. I mean, ripping it.
I love it.
It was fun. It was fun to see. I mean, I heard it from a distance and I said to my wife, I said, hey, I was hitting her in the arm. I said, what? You know, she's like, stop. And I said, no. We're going over here to listen to this. And that's who it was. Anyway,
that's great. That's awesome. All right. Give me a lead singer. I would have had a singer a week ago and I'm changing mine just in the last week. It should tell you just how I'm changing. I'm changing mine just over the last week. And I don't know how in the world this singer would fit the band that I've got together, but who's your lead singer?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you two. Mm-hmm. My number one draft pick is going to be Freddie Mercury. And number two is a guy named Kevin Dubrow. Kevin sang for Quiet Riot, God rest his soul. I loved Kevin's sound. Yep. What I love about Kevin is that he could really scream. And he had a real raspy scream to him. And then Sebastian Bach is another screamer, but had a lot more melodic tone to him from Skid Row. But Freddie Mercury, I can't sit down and listen to like just all Queen albums. But there's not a song they have that I don't like. And one of the things that I think it makes them super unique and then specifically him is that really like every single song they have is different. Mm-hmm. They're all very different from each other. Like when you think about We Are the Champions and then you think Another One Bites the Dust and then you think about like Bad Bottom Girls and like Bohemian Rhapsody, like they've got these choral arrangements, these that are just so complex. All the musicians are terrific. His voice range is ridiculous, and he can kind of play a lot of parts, you know, in very different sounds. And so that's why I went with Freddie.
There's a lot of people that would agree with you, and he's known as the greatest singer of our time for sure. I always thought what it would be like to be Brian May. Because you had no clue where he was going. Okay, we're going to do this thing where we're bringing in this orchestra for this part. I mean, could you imagine when he wrote, and of course, Brian wrote part of it with him, but when he wrote Bohemian Rhapsody and put that in front of him and said, okay, can you play this for me? He'd probably go, what are you talking about? What's going on? All right, so there's so many, and I go back and I look at singers these days that can still sing. There is nothing worse. I saw the Marshall Tucker Band about 10, 15 years ago, and not a person in the band could sing a lick. And basically the crowd was singing all their music all night long. And that was fun. Yep. But it was like, I didn't come here to see Joe next to me singing Heard It in a Love Song. I want to hear the band sing it. They just couldn't hit the notes. And there is this, I don't know if it's because they perform a lot. I don't know if it's because they practice. I don't know if they've got genealogy going for them, but like a Rick Emmett, who can still hit the high notes for Triumph, which is unbelievable. David Pack, who can still hit some songs. They're still doing some stuff with Ambrosia. He's doing some things that are just unbelievable. And I saw Ann and Nancy Wilson on the Kelly Clarkson show this morning at 3 o'clock. I got up this morning, I had to go pee and I couldn't go back to bed. And I turn on the Kelly Clarkson show and I see Ann singing Magic Man and she's nailing it. She's as big, she's as big as a house, but man, she is nailing it. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if she had lost some weight, just imagine how much better she could probably sound because she's got to sit. She cannot stand up when she sings. And I never thought he was probably 60th, 70th on my list until I saw Billy Joel do that concert from Madison Square Garden last week.
Yeah, he's great.
I just couldn't believe, I couldn't believe he was hitting the notes. When he sat there and said, you know, he gets out there and makes fun of himself. He's like, I'm going to sing this next song. And I haven't sang in a while. I don't know if I can hit these notes, but I want to try to sing an Innocent Man. I'm like, there's no way in hell he's 75 years old. He's going to be able to sing Innocent Man. And he nailed the notes. And I don't know how a 75-year-old, he sounded, I'm not going to say he sounded as good as he did back in the 70s or 80s, but it was close. You know, James Taylor, another guy I just saw several months ago at Oak Mountain.
Yeah.
Was missing some of those notes, got some background singers to hit those higher notes. But I mean, he's a folk singer for lack of a better way of describing his music, but he was still hitting the notes. But I'd have to go with Billy Joel just because he can sing anything.
I love Billy Joel. He's somebody that I have not seen that I really wish I had.
He plays Madison Square Garden every month. I've already looked it up. You can go
see an opportunity.
It's great because he plays. I think he's playing next Friday. He's playing tomorrow night. And then he's playing June 25th. He's playing July 7th. He plays one night and you can get tickets for about $250 a piece because he's playing there once a month. He's been doing it for 2 years. So if you want to go see Billy Joel, and of course he mixes the show up every single month, but he's got a residency there. Unlike any residency that I've ever done. He just plays one show a month. As long as I keep selling out, he's sold out 100 straight shows. I'm going to keep playing there. So I'm going to make my way up there to see that.
Well, there's a friend of mine sent me a YouTube video that I don't know how he found it, of Billy Joel. He's at a university. Don't ask me where, because I don't know that it says, but it's on YouTube. He's at a university and he's talking to, he's in just like a small auditorium. It's like he's doing like a, you know, he's like a day in residency or something kind of thing. So he's talking to these students, then he'll play a song. He's talking to these students, he'll play a song. And I guess somebody gave him a note, or he's taking questions. That's what it is. I think he takes questions from the students. Mm-hmm. And this one student asks if he can play with him. Can I play this? I think it was New York State of Mind.
Yeah.
And he invites this kid up.
Wow.
And the kid plays the song. And while Billy Joel sings, it's awesome. It's pretty cool because you can imagine this like 20-year-old kid clearly idolizes Billy Joel because he's a pianist. Yeah. And he gets invited up on stage in front of all his friends.
I just heard how cranky Billy has been his entire life. I've gotten a chance to meet him one time. It was 20, 30 years ago, and it was just very brief, so I couldn't tell you what kind of guy he was. But I know that, you know, he had the thing with Christie Brinkley, and that he's just a really New York type of guy. Didn't take a lot of crap, had a green room list of the length of your arm, and he was really pain in the ass to deal with. And so I was pretty much thinking he was going to get up there and do like 2.5 minute versions of all of his hits. It was live. Okay. So he was going to do 2.5 minute versions of his band. His band was going to be set back. He was going to be in the center light. It was nothing like that. He had different people. He had three different people in his band come up and actually sing his songs for him, which was just amazing. He invited Sting was out in the audience. He invited Sting to come up and sing a couple of songs. Jerry Seinfeld was there and Jerry came up and spoke with him for a minute. You could tell that he had his posse He had his group, and every one of those guys in the band were like in their 60s or 70s. They had paid their dues, and they were incredible. I mean, they were fantastic. You had guys playing four pianos at one time for him. I mean, and you're playing piano and a guy that plays the piano, for God's sakes. The only thing that sucked about it was on CBS. The only thing that was horrible about it is his last song he played was Piano Man, and the local news cut in the second refrain of Piano Man. It was supposed to end at 10 o'clock, and at 10:30, all of a sudden, CBS, welcome to CBS News, your weather tonight. And I'm going, no. And they chopped it off in the middle of Piano Man Live. I was about ready to drive to the TV station and kill the guy myself. It could have been James Spann up there for all I know. I'm like, what are you doing? You do not cut off Piano Man Live. What are you doing?
Everybody's tuned in for that.
Yeah. All right. We will have some more stuff going on next week. UABSports.com. Thank you so much. We have kept you long enough. One of our biggest and best podcasts we've had. Please go to UABSports.com. Continue to follow UAB. We've got some really special stuff we're working on here this spring and summer. It's going to be super cool for athletic fans, big time, that you and I have been working on. I think it's going to be super cool. So we're looking forward to that. But until next week, we'll catch you up, okay?
That sounds great. Hey, and please come out this weekend. Mighty Blazers are hosting Charlotte in both baseball and softball at home this weekend, so you can catch them both Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Come see the Blazers.
Thank you, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.